and welcome back to the Mood Society podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Camille. I'm a copywriter here at Mood.
And I'm Ashley, or Ash, and I help run the social media pages.
And today we're talking about the one, the only, David Bowie.
The legend.
The man, the myth. He's my favorite. I am in love with David Bowie. I've been in love with David Bowie for a very long time. He and I go way back. In 2016, when he sadly passed, I did wear mourning clothes for a whole week at high school. So this is an exciting episode for me. What do you think about David Bowie?
David. First name basis.
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
David Bowie. Honestly, I don't know how you could not be a fan of David Bowie.
He's so cool.
He's legendary, not just music-wise, but clothing, the personas that he created, just paving the way for gender and sexuality and everything.
Really everything. We'll get into it, but he's so just a pioneer of everything. All right, so David Bowie was born in 1947. He was an English rock star known for dramatic musical transformations. He's inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1996, and he is well regarded as a musical chameleon for his ever-changing appearance and sound. So let's start off discussing the most iconic David Bowie era, Ziggy Stardust.
Which is honestly like the album, the character that really propelled him into the consciousness of everyone, basically.
For sure. Like, he had Space Oddity mm-hmm. before that, but people kind of thought he was going to be a one-hit wonder. And then he came back with Ziggy Stardust. And I think it's one of the, if not the most influential era of his on fashion as a whole, too.
Oh, absolutely.
So Ziggy Stardust obviously came with the album Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. It was very much inspired by a lot of things. A new age interest in space, 2001 A Space Odyssey, Japanese culture and theater, and Kabuki theater in particular. He was interested in queer culture and blurring the line between gender. It's really cool. So where do we want to start with Ziggy Stardust?
Well, I mean, when you cover, especially with David Bowie and mm-hmm. Ziggy Stardust, you can't talk about them without talking about sexuality as a whole.
Yeah.
Because the character, with the way that David Bowie presents the character and himself on stage, it very much does blur the line of gender fluidity, embracing that androgyny, especially on the big stage during such a pivotal point in history where that was happening and more people were starting to explore.
For sure. And I also think the interesting part about David Bowie was throughout his life, he was very kind of, while he did occasionally give interviews on his sexuality, he was just kind of like, I've talked about it. Like, mm-hmm. I don't care to answer for a lot of his life because I think he just kind of let his work speak for itself. And he sort of was like, you know, I'm going to keep that side of myself private, but I'm still going to interact with sexuality in a way that's very influential and really pioneered embracing your own gender fluidity, blurring gender lines. There's a really great quote here from his longtime collaborator who we're going to talk about, Kansai Yamamoto, on Bowie wearing women's clothes. At the time, David Bowie was all about transcending gender. I didn't know anything about concepts like that, so I remember thinking, whoa, when I saw him wearing clothes I had designed for women. The clothes were influenced by hikinuki, the method of changing costumes quickly in kabuki. The audience in New York saw the costumes transform a few times during the show. I'd realized I had done something really cool when everyone in the audience got up on their feet and clapped. So that basically sums up everything that David Bowie was about at the time. Huge theatrics, but also very much performing gender on a large scale. So do you want to discuss maybe some of the iconic Ziggy looks, and then we can get into Kansai Yamamoto and his influence and contribution?
Yeah.
Sure. So let's get started with, my mom has a really great name for this look, and she calls it the record look.
Oh, that's very accurate, actually.
It's so accurate. I was lucky enough to see this outfit twice in person. It's so stunning. It's basically a black jumpsuit with silver embroidery and very, very wide legs. And the reason why the record outfit is so perfect is because when it follows the contours of the garment, it literally looks like the grooves on a vinyl record, mm-hmm. which I'm sure is something that both Bowie and Yamamoto were thinking about. Like, he's a rock star. He's wearing something that evokes a vinyl record, it makes a lot of sense. He has so many iconic looks from this era. Obviously, his hair and makeup is so important here.
The redhead mullet.
Yes. The high blush and cheekbones with the very blue eyeliner. Yeah, I was just going to say, Ash, do you want to speak on that? Because you're the makeup expert here.
Yeah. There are two articles that you had sent me that I was reading through that I found fascinating that was talking about his makeup. And one of the articles was talking about a makeup artist that worked very closely with David Bowie multiple times throughout his career. Her name is Phyllis Cohen, who really worked with him a lot in the 80s, which isn't quite where we're at right now, but she also, much like David Bowie's Ziggy Stardust look, in that era with the avant-garde artistic
look. Yeah, he was still doing a lot of very artistic stuff, like the clown outfit that he wore on SNL when performing Ash to Ashes is super iconic. Anyway, keep going.
Okay, good. And David Bowie, I mean, especially during this era, he wanted to blur the line with human and alien, so he shaved off his eyebrows, so he had more of a canvas to work on, which is also a technique that's widely used today, especially with drag queens, to have more real estate, to have those very bold eye makeup looks.
Yeah, you can really play with, like, where your eyebrow is placed, where your eyeliner is placed, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and there was another article you had sent me about what's in David Bowie's makeup bag, basically, and how he was a very loyal patron of a little shop in Rome, Italy, that used a lot of neon bright colored powders for his makeup. That's cool. Yeah, a lot of vivid shadows, really highly pigmented, like eyeshadows, like mentioned. He coated his lashes in black, sometimes blue coal.
Oh, that's crazy.
Indian coal near his roots, and he would smudge it out, and it's fascinating.
He's one of those artists where it's like, he's not only a musician, he's a fashion artist, he's a makeup artist. Like, he's just channeling his art in literally every single part of his stage performance. Mm-hmm. Weirdly, the thing I think that we can see in 2022 that is most evocative of David Bowie's makeup is Euphoria.
Yeah.
Because they have really crazy cool makeup looks that I think are really bright and bold. And obviously, not only inspired by David Bowie, inspired by different drag looks, just different looks throughout history. But I definitely think, like, that is something where you can see the direct through line of his influence.
Oh, yeah. And definitely now, since a lot of the 60s through the 90s are coming back into fashion, there are a lot of artists nowadays that are really pulling inspiration from David Bowie and also blurring the lines between the femme and the mask, like Harry Styles or
Mary's he's Kid. Like the best. Yeah, they're two really great examples. Like, I always remember that controversy when Harry Styles wore a dress on Vogue, and it was literally, everyone was like, Prince did it first. Yeah. David Bowie did it first. Like, I don't know why this is still controversial. Like, male rock stars in particular have been blurring the lines of gender forever, I feel like. But he was one of the first to really, really do it on such a scale.
Oh, absolutely.
So do you want to talk about, just dive really headfirst into Kansai Yamamoto, who I've fallen a little in love with here. This is one of the kind of big, I guess, quote unquote, you could say, issues facing fashion at the moment, which is David Bowie's relationship to Japanese culture and Japanese traditional wear, and how he really works with Kansai Yamamoto to make it more appreciation versus appropriation. So do you want to get into what a definition of both? Because I think sometimes people just call everything either appropriation or appreciation, and it's not very easily defined. So cultural appropriation is an act where one takes ideas from a culture without fully knowing the meaning or history behind it, resulting in a disrespectful misinterpretation of the original art. And I put in our notes that there's so many examples of white people appropriating Asian culture, but a very famous one is Gwen Stefani had the Harajuku Girls music video, which is just like, it's almost funny how terrible it is, but then it's also like bone chilling.
She would just go on red carpets and stuff and have like these women follow her around, like, oh my accessories.
Gosh. Like Asian women. people. But I think one of the most easily explainable examples of this is people would take the eagle feather headdress or war bonnet that we see across a lot of Indigenous Plains Native American cultures, and they would just show up at like Coachella, the Victoria's Secret Runway, you know, football teams, and wear this headdress that obviously has a huge meaning to the culture. But then they would just kind of take it and they were like, well, it looks cool. And it's like, yeah, it does look cool, but that's,
yeah, just
you're not getting the whole thing.
Like, stripping away its meaning just does such a disservice to the culture and the people. Yeah.
And especially when something is like that, where it can be like it's very ceremonial, it's very important, to just kind of take it and rip it away can be very, very disrespectful. Mm-hmm. However, there's also the idea, and this has come up more recently, of cultural appreciation, because I'm sure we have people listening to this and they're like, well, wait a second. Like, there are some situations where it would actually be disrespectful for you not to, quote unquote, appropriate from a culture. Mm-hmm. So what I've defined as appreciation is someone from outside of the culture is either invited to or buys directly from someone within that culture. So a good example is being part of a wedding party where you would be wearing henna. It would be kind of disrespectful to refuse to wear henna, even though it's not part of your culture. Another example could just be buying arts, crafts, or clothes directly from a designer or artist from a specific culture, which is what David Bowie did.
Oh, yeah. And Camille and I come from a theater background, and this is a conversation that comes up a lot
all
designing shows.
The time.
Yeah, like whether if someone in the show is of a specific ethnicity or a culture and you want to portray that, how do you do that without it becoming a stereotype?
Yeah.
How do you do that without becoming disrespectful?
There's also the question of, it's sometimes colloquially referred to as culture vulturing, where people will take something from a culture. Like, a really great example of this is Star Wars. They'll take something from a culture and then kind of turn it into like a sci-fi or fantasy version of it. And there's a lot of kind of gray area in terms of like what is correct, what is not correct. And throughout this whole conversation, I just want to say, like, obviously, this is a tough topic, and there are very few, like, 100% right, 100% wrong answers in anything in life. But particularly with this, I mean, there are so many situations I can think of where it can kind of blur the line. A great example was the conversation we had about cider, where they had designs that were inspired by the qipao.
Yeah.
From Chinese culture by a Chinese designer that they were selling online. But then because it's under a brand name, people were accusing them of appropriation. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of this weird blurred line of like, well, I don't know. I don't have the answers. I am not pretending that I do. But I do think what David Bowie was doing in the 70s was really showing a way where you can, you know, directly interact and exchange with a culture that inspires you, and you're not like just taking from it without total thought.
Oh, absolutely. If there's any way to go about the topic of appropriation versus appreciation, David Bowie definitely did justice to the appreciation side, the way he went about to do it.
He went directly to a Japanese designer, Kansai Yamamoto, who was known for very bright prints, loud colors, blurring that line between gender, and using Japanese culture, particularly the styles and costumes of kabuki, as we previously mentioned, and turning that into sort of a performance that you could see David Bowie on TV. I also just think it's important to note that Bowie was doing this very closely to World War II, where there was a huge amount of racism, particularly in England, against Japanese people. A great example of just, if you want to see what that was like, just what happened to Yoko Ono, I think is a really great example. And I think for Bowie to interact so respectfully with the culture at the time, although it seems like just an obvious thing now, I think it was a really radical act at that time.
Oh, absolutely. And just, like, I have major respect for David Bowie wanting to shed light on Japanese designs just as a whole, because he could have very easily just not, and just done a very British or very American look. And the fact that he decided to blend a more Japanese look to this character in particular of Ziggy, who is an alien. Because there was an interview that I was watching of David Bowie talking about how he decided to dive more into the Japanese look.
Mm-hmm.
Because Ziggy was an alien, and at that time, even though Japan was still of the Earth, it felt very alien to the Western lens. Especially in post-World War II world.
For sure.
That he wanted to spread that more to the masses and be like, hey, they're still very much human. Like, they're still very much a human aspect to them, even if they feel alien. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's so smart. He really was thinking with all levels. he's so cool. So going back to the record look that we were talking about, it's also very inspired by the Hakama pants that samurai wore,
mm-hmm.
In traditional samurai garb. And, oh, just disclaimer, we don't speak Japanese, so I really apologize if we mispronounce anything. We do our best every time to absolutely try and pronounce it correctly, but mm-hmm. mistakes happen. We are not native speakers of the language.
We're trying here.
We're trying. Another great example is this quick change cape that he wore, that he was adorned with Japanese kanji, and then he would quickly switch out of it into like a very skin tight knit suit. Mm-hmm. And I can only imagine, obviously there's not a ton of footage. There's one concert film of the Ziggy Stardust years, but I would have loved to see that live. That sounds so cool.
Yes, that would have been very cool to see.
Yeah. And there are so many great images of Kansai Yamamoto and Bowie just interacting and being true collaborators. I really love this quote that Yamamoto said about Bowie. Some sort of chemical reaction took place. My clothes became a part of David, his songs and his music. They became part of the message he delivered to the world, which I think really sums up that he was really being a true collaborator with Yamamoto. He was not just like, give me your clothes or like design this and no, like you have no say in what I wear. They were really trying to interact with each other. I love this image of him wearing the
matching.
They're both matching. It's super cute. And he's wearing the very famous, it's a skin tight knit jumpsuit with one arm and one leg. And the jumpsuit is cut like so low, but they're just like looking at each other and you can tell that they're talking and really interacting, and Bowie's smiling and so is Yamamoto. And it's a great image, I think, of like what that collaboration looks like.
Oh yeah.
I think that's beautiful.
I definitely think partial reason why the two collaborated so well, they had such a similar outlook on exploring clothes, style, and gender.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Yamamoto's designs, especially in this era for David Bowie, he pulled heavily from Japanese concepts such as basara, which is a style of flamboyance and extravagance. And a lot of the silk capes, which we do have an image over there,
yes,
of David Bowie wrapped in. It was printed with ukiyo-e paintings. Yes.
Yeah, those are if you've ever seen The Great Wave, that's a really great example of a ukiyo-e print. And particularly the ones of kabuki actors, their faces are very expressive.
Mm-hmm.
You can even see they have makeup quite like what David Bowie was wearing during this time, because he was influenced by it. They have like very high cheekbones, dramatic makeup.
Lots of high drama.
High drama. And that is what David Bowie was going for. I think throughout his whole life, he was just like the high drama, which I love. Just another quote I loved from Helen Tian. She said, Bowie challenged this tendency of Western fashion at the time to lump all Asian styles together as, quote, Orientalism, unquote. And I really like this quote just because this is something we see up until 2022, that people just don't consider that all East Asian cultures are not the same.
Yeah, even like I'm half Chinese, but like the... Even today, like, it baffles me that the term Orientalism is still being thrown out, because that's a term that personally bothers me. So I'm glad David Bowie at that time tried to be like, this is Japanese culture. Yeah. It's not all the same.
It's not Chinese. It's not Korean. It's specifically Japanese culture, because I think that's still unfortunately happens to this day where people just don't kind of recognize that there's many different cultures in that area. If you think about just how big, like, China is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, like, literally.
Landmass-wise.
Like, yeah, there's different little tribes.
Yeah. And... like, there's going to be so many different cultures and people. So I think it's important that we all recognize that there's just differences there, and that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Another just great example, like, he literally, every single time, he went right to the source of where his inspiration was coming from.
Which is definitely the correct way to do it.
Yeah, just go straight to the source. He literally learned the kabuki makeup, the kabuki-inspired makeup that we were talking about with the bold highlighted features and the very pale, pale face.
Mm-hmm.
He learned it from famed Onagata Tamasaburo Bando, just how to apply the traditional kabuki makeup. He had a background in mime. So when he, to me, it seems like a very natural transition for him to just be experimenting with all these different types of theatrical performance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is funny. I was watching, like, just before we started recording mm-hmm. this podcast episode, I was watching a really lengthy YouTube documentary about just the timeline of David Bowie.
Yeah.
And in the beginning, like, his first album was very heavily pantomime and vaudeville.
Oh.
And I'm like, yeah.
So. Yeah, it's real weird. They have some of his old mime stuff at the David Bowie Is exhibit when it was touring, and you just watch it, you're like, wow, that was the 60s. Like, it was just real weird. Like, but I mean, hey, it's cool. And he definitely, I love that he was always trying new things. Like,
absolutely.
We'll get into his, I guess, next era of Bowie-ness, that he was just always willing to reinvent himself and was like, when he was done with something, he was done with it. And I can appreciate that.
Oh, absolutely. He knew when the end of something was near and
yeah.
wanted to end it. A lot of people just drag it on.
Yeah. Like, I just think of all those TV shows that go on for like 8 seasons and you're just like, this should have been done 4 seasons ago, but I'm still here. All right. Sweet. Let's get into another heavy topic. The Thin White Duke.
Mm-hmm.
And the Man Who Fell to Earth. All right. So this was David Bowie's next era. He was known for very bleached white hair and sharp tailored black and white suits. Now, we will say that the Thin White Duke was very influenced by fascism. I will also put a disclaimer out there that at this time, David Bowie was solely consuming milk, chili peppers, and cocaine. So we can assume that he was not in his right mind.
Yeah, he talked about how he did not remember a lot of
this. Yeah, he like literally, he's like, yeah, I knew I was in LA because I read somewhere that I was in LA during that time, which is just, oh, that's crazy. But the reason I brought this up is because we discussed this in our horror movies episode, and I was like, why does this keep happening? Like, why is this so prevalent in a lot of these hugely influential fashion moments? I don't know. I don't have a good answer. That's more of a question I just wanted to put out there. And
what do you all think?
What do you
Let
all
us know
oh,
on our
God.
Facebook group.
No, we can't talk a discussion on fascism on Facebook, Ash. But as a question, I always like to, in my life, ask myself questions that can never really be answered. And I just think about them a lot. And like, what does it mean to be influenced by this period? Because he looks very cool. Because he's David Bowie and he looks good in everything, but he does look very, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like he has an eye for fashion. So it's just confusing. And I think it's important, you know, even if you're like going to pull inspiration from this period, I wouldn't necessarily like condemn anyone if they were like influenced by the Thin White Duke. That's fine. But I think it's just important. A lot of the times we don't really realize where these things come from. And then we're just like, oh, okay, that looks cool. Again, with the cultural appropriation thing, like we just think, oh, that looks cool. Let me grab that.
Yeah.
And we don't necessarily think of like the implications behind it.
Mm-hmm.
During this time, he was also filming The Man Who Fell to Earth, which is one of his most iconic movie roles. He plays a literal alien. He looks so beautiful. His hair looks beautiful. His clothes are beautiful. He's beautiful, man. I don't know what else to say other than just watch this movie. It's really cool. It's very 70s and trippy. Mm-hmm. He was, I think, very consumed by this role, too, and kind of, again, because he was not necessarily in his right mind, was...
I definitely also feel like with David Bowie, he does get very, very into the characters that he plays. Yeah,
he's almost like a method actor.
He 100% is.
Yeah. Because
there was a point, I think, with Ziggy, that partial reason why he stopped very abruptly was he started to get to the point where he couldn't differentiate between himself and the character.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
yeah. And I think maybe that kind of happened here with the Thin White Dude, too. Like, he was so into the character. I think he's even said in interviews, like, oh, I was playing a character when he was trying to kind of pass it off. And then in his later years, he was like, yeah, I was out of my mind. Like, yeah. He's like, I don't know what happened. But I think he definitely is just that type of personality who, when he did something, he did it like 110% to the detriment sometimes of himself.
Yeah.
And I mean, there are some images of him during this period where you can like just look at his face. And he's so gaunt and thin. And I just want to like grab him and be like, stop. Like, it's sad. It's also, you know, he's also a genius. So it's kind of another.
Feels like a lot of that goes hand in hand sometimes.
I know. So sad. To cheer ourselves up, do you want to talk about Labyrinth?
180.
Okay. Is this the most iconic David Bowie role? Yeah.
For me personally, I knew David Bowie and Labyrinth before I really started to listen to his music. So for a lot of people looking in from the outside, Labyrinth is definitely the gateway to David Bowie.
Labyrinth is so cool. He's so good in the movie. He plays the Goblin King. He is just his makeup, first of all.
Like, and the wig.
The wig, the makeup, when he shows up the first time in the movie and he like shows up in Sarah's bedroom and he's got like the wind blowing in his hair and this like super sparkly suit and he's just like there. It's so cool. And he's got those like huge, very pointed eyebrows and the white makeup. I mean, everything about it is so perfect for the character he was playing. And it's such an iconic costume. I feel like I see so many cosplays of this costume particular. And even with like fashion now, I'm seeing this kind of Edwardian ruffle blouse that he has going on come back. That kind of new romantic 1980s.
Yeah, new like, romantics.
Look, I feel like people are definitely going for. Yeah. Again, I think if anyone is listening who is a huge Harry Styles fan and has not delved deep into Bowie, I think you should, because I think Harry Styles owes a lot to David Bowie.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. And yeah. Jennifer Connelly is also really beautiful in this movie. Her dress is like the most 80s, but so pretty.
Very iconic.
It's just so good. If you haven't watched Labyrinth, I don't know.
And the music. David Bowie wrote obviously a lot of songs in the movie, so... Also, watch it for the music.
As the World Falls Down is like one of my favorite David Bowie songs. It's so pretty.
It's a very pretty song.
It's gorgeous. All right, let's get into the 90s with McQueen. All right. So Alexander McQueen is definitely one of the fashion loves of my life. He's so cool. He's, I think, one of the most popular designers of the last 50 years.
Oh, absolutely.
The McQueen show sold out like over and over again. And so did the David Bowie show. And it's so cool that those two worked together. And Bowie specifically recruited McQueen before he was the Alexander McQueen.
The McQueen.
The McQueen, who we can just say his last name and we know who he is.
Yeah.
He made this very iconic frock coat for him. It was made from a distressed Union Jack that they tore up and they added tulle with, and it is so cool.
I loved reading about the making of this coat.
So they brought it to a park in London, basically. Yeah,
they brought it to a park and they just threw it on the floor and they were smudging dirt and distressing it and stomping on it. And that's one of my favorite parts about costuming, quote unquote,
it's so
fashion,
fun.
Just distressing garments.
It's the best part. It's because there's something like a very dark joy out of working on something for a very, very long time and then getting told to rip it up. Like, it's very fun. Yeah, at this time he was co-headlining with Nine Inch Nails, again, a super important band in music. And he was just, he wore a lot of McQueen's frock coats. And McQueen was known for his tailoring. Before he went to school, like fashion school at Central St. Martin's, he worked on Savile Row as a tailor's apprentice. So all of his clothes were very expertly tailored, and that was one of his trademarks. So I think it's really cool that early in his career, he was working with one of the biggest rock stars of all time, making expertly tailored yet rock star perfect frock coats. And he looks, obviously Bowie looks great. He looks great in everything, but
absolutely fantastic. I just love how this look in particular is so much more masculine compared to a lot of his earlier outfits. Yeah. And like, David Bowie can do it all.
Yeah, this was after he, I love in the 80s, that's one of my favorite David Bowie periods, where he's like, you know what, I'm going to be a pop star. And then he successfully becomes a pop star, and then he goes back to making really weird experimental music.
Yeah.
But it's just really cool that like David Bowie, he was so into just changing his look, again, from masculine to the more feminine to the more androgynous. Mm-hmm. The fact that he's the king of colorful and unconventional suiting, and that is one of the most major trends on the runway right now.
Oh, absolutely. Very vibrant colors. A lot of jewel tones are making a rise again on the runways that we have seen.
Yeah, and he was doing this not just from his, you know, his youth and his Ziggy Stardust era, which is obviously one of the more, like, out there in flamboyant eras. He was doing this, I pulled a picture through the 90s, through the early 2000s. He was really trying to experiment. There's a great interview of him with, like, him interviewing Alexander McQueen and them talking to each other. And you can tell, like, McQueen kind of treats Bowie as an equal, because he's like, this is someone who really, really knows about fashion and, like, knows what he's talking about. And mm-hmm. I think everything he did was so purposeful mm-hmm. as to what he put on his body. It was just like, this is going to serve my character purposefully. He Absolutely. Understood costume design in a great way.
Yeah, no, genuinely. He's just an artist through and through. Music, clothing, acting, like everything.
Everything, yeah. Do you want to talk about some of the other cool Bowie things that we discovered? Like, he was in SpongeBob.
Which I actually didn't know until we were researching for this podcast.
Yeah, he was in SpongeBob because that was his daughter's favorite show. And so he wanted his daughter to think he was cool. So he went on SpongeBob, cute. Which is adorable. Oh, he was so cool. He was a frequent collaborator of people like Lou Reed and Iggy Pop, who are dope.
Oh, yeah.
He was one of the first people to, on MTV, called them out for basically only pushing white artists during the primetime hours mm-hmm. and then saving any artists of color for like 2 or 3 a.m. when nobody was watching. And he literally called them out on air and was like, why are you doing this? Like, you should be playing more artists of color. And that was really cool. What other things do you want to mention?
He co-wrote the song Fame with John Lennon.
Yes.
Yeah. And Carlos Alomar.
Wow, there's cool stuff. I mean, he did so much cool stuff. So.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely not going to be able to cover. We're not going to be able to touch upon everything that he's done here.
For sure. This is just like the highlights. And particularly the highlights of what is so influential in fashion. And like, if someone is curious about David Bowie in terms of a fashion sense, like, I think Ziggy Stardust, then White Duke, McQueen are like the three ways
to go. And David Bowie had other characters that also, like, some characters that kind of riffed off of Ziggy, like Aladdin Sane or Halloween Jack. And yeah,
he was constantly reinventing himself. So there's plenty of material to pull from if you are interested in getting a David Bowie inspired look. Shall we end this portion on your quotes?
Yes. And to very neatly wrap this up in a little bow, a quote from David Bowie back in 1974. He said, "One of my great loves is clothes. I'm really mad about them." And the second quote reads, "When I go out onto a stage, I try to make the performance as good and as interesting as possible. And I don't just mean singing my songs and moving off. I think if you're really going to entertain an audience, then you have to look the part too." And David Bowie definitely always looked the part.
For sure. All right, let's get into some runways and how you can recreate some of David Bowie's iconic style with mood patterns. And then we'll just get into everything cool and exciting at mood, because I feel like there's so much stuff going on.
Yes. Yes. So much stuff.
It's exciting. All right. Woo. One of the designers who is most influenced by Bowie is definitely Jean-Paul Gaultier. I feel like he's had 27 different collections that are all Bowie themed.
Yeah.
We pulled from two. One is a beauty look from spring 2011 where the model has a red mullet, blue eyeliner. It's a
very clearly David
It's a direct
Bowie.
Reference. Same with this spring 2013 look where he has the one shoulder jumpsuit covered in stars and in the same color palette as Yamamoto's jumpsuit. And again, with the red mullet and the one leg. And if you were interested in that kind of daring, exciting one shoulder look,
We
just came out with a new pattern called
the Evans bodysuit, which is also very much along the lines of that cyberpunk futuristic trend that we're seeing on the runways.
Yeah, which
now.
I think is, again, influenced by David Bowie, I guarantee, because he was an alien sci-fi.
Yeah, I mean, he was one of he definitely was one of the first who really dived deep into that alien, otherworldly aesthetic.
Yeah, and the Evans bodysuit is perfect for that. We made it out of a really pretty green velour, which is super beautiful. And we just paired it with a simple set of sweatpants. And I think it's a really cool look if you're, like, looking for something a little more edgy and fashion forward, but that you can still, like, wear out.
Oh, yeah, and you can definitely very easily add a leg to this bodysuit if you want to mimic.
If you wanted, yeah, I think it's a great, like, secret cosplay another new pattern that also gives off David Bowie vibes, but David Bowie in the Labyrinth vibes, is the cardinal blouse.
Yeah, with the frilly collar.
Yeah, for sure. You could definitely take this blouse, pair it with a frock coat or a vest, and give yourself, again, a secret Jareth cosplay.
Yes.
It's so cool. It's also just, I think it's a great blouse in general, for wearing.
I mean, it's definitely, again, on trend that we're seeing with a lot of the dark academia aesthetics, a lot of the college core aesthetics we're also seeing.
Yeah, I really like this one. I personally think it's great to have a little loose poet blouse in your wardrobe. That's my tip for the day.
Yeah. Want to be a pirate? Want to be a poet?
Want to be Jim Morrison? All right. Then we have some specifically Bowie-inspired patterns to recommend to you, and then we'll get into all of our new items and everything upcoming. Cool. So, obviously, David Bowie was the king of jumpsuits. Mm-hmm. And we have two really great 70s-inspired jumpsuit patterns.
And this is definitely not our only jumpsuits.
For sure.
We have, on our Mood Society blog, we have a ton of different jumpsuits to choose from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all I had to say. there's a ton of jumpsuits and patterns that you can take. We have overalls, full-on jumpsuits, rompers. Mm. But these two are just specifically 70s inspired, the cherry jumpsuit and the forest jumpsuit. I believe the forest jumpsuit was made out of a denim, and that really gives it that kind of 70s vibe.
Yeah, and the cherry jumpsuit features those fit and flare wide cut pants, is also very 70s.
Yeah, nice crisp triangle collar, which gives it kind of more of a menswear feel, if you're interested in how David Bowie played with menswear. And then we also have the Nepeta blazer, the Aster pants, and the Ursula suit, which are all great options for some unconventional, colorful, interesting suitings.
Mm-hmm. And we also have the Zinnia jacket.
I love this jacket.
It's such a cool jacket. And if you want to rock the Union Jack McQueen frock coat vibes, this is definitely the pattern
for sure
for you.
Yeah, it's so cool. And it's not too, I think, historical, where it's not like you couldn't wear it out or like it feels like you're wearing a costume, but it definitely is influenced by the historical frock coat look, which is also super on trend.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's get into new fabric collections. Brocades, brocades, brocades.
We have so many brocades.
There's so many. We're releasing them in batches. So the first is going to be 100 plus brocades, and then we're going to up that by another 100. So we've got 200 plus brocades. There's so many different vibes. Mm-hmm. There's glam rock brocades, so definitely very Bowie inspired. You've got like very traditional, not traditional, but like very classic evening wear, high end mm-hmm. looks. And then you've also got super unconventional fantasy sci-fi inspired brocades.
Yeah, there's a lot of super vibrant colors, a lot of neon brocades mm-hmm. in there. There are some brocades that are also very soft, very comfortable to the touch.
Yeah, there's some. There's a bunch with I think they're called like with a smooth backing or with backing on the site, and the backing is always like really nice. It's mm-hmm. like I was like, oh yeah, this is nice, because oftentimes with brocades you have to use a lining just to make sure that like you know, it's nice and soft against your skin, and also that the fibers are protected. But with that, I was like, oh wow, like I was loving that. We also have a bunch of upcoming, not by the time this drops, but very soon, and being released throughout the next couple of months, new vintage trims and buttons. We're super excited, again, to give you a more luxe glam look. These are the moment. The moment. The moment. Yeah, so they'll be released throughout the next couple of months. And released as of this recording are the new fabric block printing supplies.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a lot of new kits and bundles mm-hmm. for you all to check out. The block printing, we have some beaded embroidery kits that mm-hmm. just dropped. We also have fairly new flocked fabrics for you all to check out.
Yes.
Highly recommend, especially if you want to get more of those. Also 70s vibe.
Yeah, I think we mentioned them last time, but they are just cool. So cool. So we're just going to mention them again.
Get them.
Yeah, just they're cool. Yeah, I love our new kits and bundles. I feel like, yeah, I would shop kits and bundles just because mm-hmm. I can be a little lazy, and it's all there. You don't have to click it. Like, it's just right there. Like, yeah, the new fabric block printing kits are super cool. That's a skill I've always wanted to try. So I'm excited that we have them at the warehouse. All right. That's it for us this month of January, y'all.
Thank you for tuning in.
Yeah. Happy 2022.
Yeah. Happy New Year. Woo.
Woo. We hope you have a beautiful new year, and we can't wait to continue to produce more episodes and get conversations going. Bye. Thank you for listening to the Mood Society podcast. We are produced by Mood Designer Fabrics and the Mood Society blog. Be sure to follow us on social media for sewing and podcast updates. We are at Mood Fabrics on Instagram, Pinterest, and TikTok. Join our Facebook group, linked in the description, if you'd like to directly interact with us, ask us questions, and post updates on what you've been making. And if you're loving the podcast, be sure to give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and tell your friends. Whether you're sewing, crafting, designing, or just hanging out, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.